Saram, dear listeners, and welcome to Vahini Satsang. I'm Team Radio Sai Bishu, and along with me, as always, is Sai Prakash. 40 weeks ago, we started this series to ruminate on Bhagwan's message written directly by him in the form of a series of articles which were published in Sanatan Sarathi and later compiled into books. We started with Bhagwan's first series, the Prema Vahini. We are now in the 13th chapter of this sacred text, and in the last episode we had Brother Aman Javeri, a research scholar from the Department of Management Studies, who shared interesting instances from his own life about how, if one has the conviction and confidence, one cannot be detracted from walking on the path laid down by Bhagwan, no matter how difficult or different the circumstances may be. And then we had Professor Venkatraman explaining to us with examples about the state of modern education today and how Swami has showed us the right way. So we will continue from there. Professor Venkatraman is again with us today as we dwell more into this subject. So with prayers at his lotus feet, let's begin this session. Sir, last time we discussed the last segment of chapter 13, and there are a few more questions related to this segment. So, with your permission, can we play that last segment once again?
Sure, sure.
Ika meer abhyasinchunademi, ika meeku sukham eppudu, srushti marmamu telisukonuteppudu, shashvata sukham okkate kani రెండూ లేవు. దానిపైననే దృష్టి పెట్టుడు. ఉపనిషద్ విద్యలను అభ్యసించుడు. కష్టసుఖాలలో ఉన్నను, జీవితాధార విద్యలను అభ్యసించుచుండినను దృష్టి మాత్రం బ్రహ్మపైనుంచుడు. సుగుణముల అభివృద్ధిని తర్ఫీదు చేయక తెలివి మాత్రం అభివృద్ధి చేయు నేటి విద్యలు లోక కళ్యాణమునకే హానికరం. ఇట్టి సద్గుణములపై నేటి బాలురకు బిగువు లేకుండుటకు ప్రస్తుత విద్యా విధానమున ఆధ్యాత్మిక సద్బోధనలు లేకుండుటే కారణం. బాలురు కాని, బాలికలు కాని, స్త్రీలు కాని, పురుషులు కాని పవిత్రమైన, బలమైన, అందమైన, శీలమును పాడుచేయని విద్యనే అలవర్చుకునవలెను. అట్టి విద్యయే విద్య కాని, ఎక్కడెక్కడో ఉన్న అన్ని రకాల సంగతులను తీసుకుని వచ్చి విద్యార్థుల బుర్రలలో చేర్చుకునుట కాదు. మానవులలో ఉండు ప్రత్యేక గుణ విశేషములకు పరిపూర్ణ వికాసం కలిగించు పద్ధతియే ఆధ్యాత్మిక విద్య.
వాట్ విల్ కన్ఫర్ పీస్ అండ్ వెల్ బీయింగ్ ఫర్ మ్యాన్ కైండ్ ఈస్ ద మెసేజ్ ఆఫ్ ద సేజెస్ అండ్ సియర్స్, నాట్ ఎనిథింగ్ ఎల్స్. ఈవెన్ యాజ్ వన్ పిక్స్ అప్ వేరియస్ నాలెడ్జ్ అండ్ స్కిల్స్ టు ఎర్న్ వన్స్ లైవ్లీహుడ్ అండ్ గోస్ త్రూ ద విసిసిట్యూడ్స్ ఆఫ్ లైఫ్, వన్స్ విజన్ మస్ట్ బి ఫోకస్డ్ ఆన్ ద లార్డ్. పర్మనెంట్ హ్యాపీనెస్ ఇస్ వన్, నాట్ టూ, and can be secured through the study of the Upanishads. The present education that seeks to improve one's intelligence but not the growth of virtues is detrimental for the welfare of mankind. If the children of today do not take to cultivating virtues, it is because the current educational system is bereft of spiritual instruction. Be it men, women or children, all must strive to imbibe that knowledge which will contribute to a strong, beautiful and virtuous character. This alone is knowledge, not all and sundry information gathered from all sources and crammed into the heads of the students. Spiritual knowledge is that methodology which enables the complete blossoming of the unique qualities inherent in man.
So here Bhagavan is talking about the education system, and if I'm not wrong, sir, your association with the university began as a visiting professor way back in 1992. Is that right, sir?
Yes, 92. Right. Correct.
And of course, later Swami blessed you with the opportunity of being the vice chancellor of his university. But let me ask you something not philosophical, but more a little bit on the personal domain. When you first time came to the university, and having worked in so many institutions and having actually built many institutions, what were your initial impressions as you interacted with the students, the faculty, and you saw the campus in Prashantinilayam?
Okay. Before I answer, I would like to state my terms and conditions.
Okay.
It's very common. Even when you sign up on Facebook or whatever it is, that is stipulated. There is something about this Vahini which I would like to call attention to. And so towards the end, you have to give me some time so that I can connect with Prema Vahini.
Definitely, sure.
Okay. I don't exactly remember how I looked at it. But one thing I will say. Birthday was over, and on 25th, the classes were to resume.
Mm-hmm.
So I was going for my first class. I sat there, and Swami came for morning darshan. He said, I want to start teaching. I am going to start teaching. He said, very good.
Mm-hmm.
So I went there, and it took me some time to get through. So rather familiarize myself with the school and the university and all that. What I noticed first was that there is what you may call discipline, mm-hmm, in a certain sense. People didn't run around, didn't struggle late, and all that. Especially the fire session was very, made a deep impact on me. And then shortly afterwards, Swami went to Vrindavan. I had a teaching assignment there. So I went for teaching. And in the evening there was a thrice session. And in the thrice session, after I had access to it, I sat sort of somewhere in the middle, not along the wall, because that was only certain, you had to earn that wall. Okay, wall status. I was sitting right in front of Jula, about 10-15 feet away from him. After the small talk was gone, Swami mentioned my name. I stood up. What are you doing? I said, I'm teaching. Then casually asked me, how do you find the boys? I said, I find them very good. Then he bowled a bouncer like anything I had never seen. He said, Adharama Adema. I didn't understand both words.
Oh.
He could see. I mean, it's like some fast bowler who bowls at 90 miles per hour, bowling to a 10-year-old kid. So he saw I was completely bowled. Very gently talked out, turned his side and started talking to someone else. Everybody forgot my problem. So, at that point, I became less involved with students, except as a teacher and my duties as a teacher. I was stuck on these two words. I didn't know what they meant.
So what was the exact sentence Swami asked?
I said, boys are very good. How do you know? Adharama Adhema. That's all.
Oh, is it Adharam or is it Adhyam?
Yes. I didn't know the meaning of those two words, nor did I know how it was connected to students being good. I mean, even though I had a lot of career outside, I was made to look less than a novice. So he turned away and I was saved for the day. But those words stuck in my mind. So from those days, I was a teacher in the classroom, but I was a learner. And thanks to my prior training, my learning was of a different style. And that has helped me to accelerate fast, always checking it out with problems. Problems is, I ask a question, how do I solve it within the framework of this? That was very helpful to me. And in later years, it enabled me to do many things, including write books and all that stuff. So, I don't know whether it's an adequate answer to you, but you better change the topic because the clock, otherwise we'll end up the whole day.
No, but he has left so many question marks now.
No, you ask me later. Let us stick to Prema Vahini. Otherwise, somebody can sue you. You know, you said Prema Vahini. Who the hell wants to know what that fellow is?
No, we all want to know, education.
I will give it to you on a separate occasion. You pay me for it.
Separate payment basis.
No, but let us see it. Yes. There is time enough.
Sure.
See, when we finish the book, we can extend the series.
Yeah.
Okay?
Definitely.
That is a fair deal. You can, anything you want to ask.
Okay.
Definitely.
So he's going to throw
in this paragraph, like Swami was saying that since the worldly education is promoting intelligence, so it is not good even for this world. Just promotion of intelligence alone is not good for this world also. That's what is written here. In one sense, we have heard of the philosophy of educare that has to come from within. But my question is...
No, that is a wrong interpretation. It has two aspects.
Okay. So, maybe then we should understand what educare actually is. But more than that, education is what is being taught to us from outside. And if somebody is teaching us something, and if it is not adequate, what is the scope for somebody to develop? Like suppose a student, it's no fault of the student. He is being taught a certain... thing in the class or in the school, how will that student know that this is not adequate or what? Where's the gap?
You see, when you say you get from outside,
yes.
Most of you, when you talk about education, you think of classrooms. Now, I would like to break free of the classrooms.
Okay.
There is a reason for this. Because only then we get a better idea of what education and the role it has to play and all that. The moment you talk about classroom, the nuts and bolts of methodology takes over and becomes a tyrant.
Correct.
Okay. I will just, I don't want to spend too much time, I'll give you an example. Instead of using the word education, I'll say learning.
Yes.
Learning is a better word because learning is what, for you to learn, the education is a system that allows you to learn. So, then comes the question, what is the meaning of learning? Can animals learn?
Right.
To what extent can they learn? To what extent can we learn? To what extent am I different from animals? Is my capability an accident or something else? There are lots of issues come. And so on. Just to give an example of learning and all that, just 2 minutes.
Sure, sir.
I regularly try to listen to a BBC program called News Hour Extra. It is sort of not compared. It is hosted by a fellow called Owen Bennett Jones. He's very sharp, very good. And before he got this job, he used to do something else. I heard him interview Benazir Bhutto and all those things. In fact, he began in a very low level. He used to go to Afghanistan. First he goes to Montana, gets a driving license. Then he goes to Afghanistan, gets a driving license. But then he is doing this. Very recently, just last week, he ran a program. Usually it's 60 minutes, 58 or so. And he divides it into two halves. How much growth do we need?
Mm-hmm.
It was a very interesting program. Somebody talked about degrowth. Somebody talked about growth is focusing too much on GDP. You must also look at social inequity, all that. It was very nice. But then... they also talked about technology solutions for problems arising of inequity and all that. Nobody asked the question, can technology really solve the problems? This is a mistake that is being made repeatedly. Jeffrey Sachs did it. Before then, Lester Brown did it. So many people, Thomas Friedman says technology. At the end of the day, technology is created by man, operated by man, and what is that to prevent it from being a crook? So how can technology solve problems? I find there is nobody talking about it at all. And I'm stunned. So, what I would like to do is, when I learn, I would like to put it in expanding horizons. Then, I will be in a position to deal with it. The expanding horizon is needed because all the problems which people talk about, whether it's air pollution or whatever it is, comes from the mind. If mind is the culprit, how do I deal with this fellow who is elusive? So, when Swami talks about education and all that, that really speaking, if education does not pay attention to it, it is what is called drilling of a certain kind. And just to stress that, some years ago, after a lot of corporate frauds were being committed in the United States, the Harvard University decided to put a value-based course.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Harvard is excellent in the academic, they are top leaders in many fields, sciences and management, sociology, and all that. So they put this, they put a scotch tape. And they teach it in such a way, you can remember this if you want, and if you don't like it, throw it away. That's the kind of thing. Now the uniqueness about Swami is, he says, you can break it, but that is wrong. As Cecil B. DeMille said, you never break the law, law breaks you. So that is he said it that way. So if I am learning, what good does it do to me? In the sense, how does it help me to serve society better? That's the way I will put it.
Okay.
That is the real objective of Swami. People can come to the classroom and interpret it in different ways. That is their mistake. Now, luckily for me, I didn't take lessons from anybody. I listened to Swami's discourse, and I trained myself by talking to people and say, ask me questions. When they ask questions, I am challenged. And I go through many levels of challenge, and finally I got some perspective. It may be useful for you to keep that in mind.
Absolutely.
I don't know whether this was useful. Was it clear?
Sure. Yeah, sure, sir.
No, it brought about two points. One is that learning is independent of what is being taught in the classroom. That is one thing that clearly comes out. And I think the focus on service to society is the other thing which is very important.
Yes. So, and this is consolidated by a statement of Weisskopf, which I often quote. He said, compassion without knowledge is ineffective. Knowledge without compassion is inhumane.
Yes.
So I may know a lot, but I'm the person, devil. I may be compassionate, but I may be able to do only locally.
Yeah.
You cannot change the world.
Yeah.
Now, when you are having a power of authority and all that, and if you are compassionate, you can do a lot.
Correct.
That's the whole point. And the bottom line is, I don't have to drop the atom bomb to become inhumane. I can use the knowledge to exploit society. Market forces do that.
Yes.
So what is happening? It is a zero-sum game. Some fellow wins, somebody loses. In Swami's system, when I have knowledge and compassion and I synthesize both, it becomes a win-win game. Zero-sum game to win-win. It completely changes the accountancy.
Yes.
That is very important. That is one thing I got from Swami.
In fact, just the other day, we were having a discussion with some of the former students of Bhagwan's University who have been now serving here many years as teachers, and they have been chanting Vedam here. And Dr. Shivshankar Sai, he was part of that discussion. And he narrated how once when they had invited Bhagwan to the institute auditorium to distribute prizes, so Swami personally in those days used to give prizes to all the prize winners. And as Swami was leaving, Swami called the warden sir And Swami asked, how many boys got prizes? And so he said, Swami, about 150 students. How many students totally are there in the hostel? And he said, Swami, about, I think it was about 350 or 400 students. Swami said, what about the rest? Why didn't all the other students get prizes? So that was, you know, Swami was more concerned about all the other students who did not get a prize. And in fact, that's how Shivasankar Sai Sir was saying, they started so many competitions. Because Swami wanted that every student has some talent or in him. And we have to create those opportunities so that everyone deserves a prize. So they said, we started Vedam competition, we started Vedam single, Vedam pair, Vedam explanation, Vedam in group, everything is possible.
Also painting and all.
Painting, yes. Sketching, clay modeling.
By the way, there is one thing absolutely unique about Swami's institutions, which is not found anywhere in India. And I believe also in the other world, other parts of the world. At least the parts I know about. Can you say what it is? That is one thing that struck me.
About Swami's system of education?
I will say Swami's institutions. I am not talking about
institutions.
System is a different thing. It can be adopted by anybody, anywhere. Swami's institutions.
I think one thing which comes to mind, of course, is the lifestyle of students. Because
no, something more.
Okay.
Lifestyle and all that is... this is something stark contrast, absolutely stark contrast.
Mm-hmm. Well, we know the overarching...
One word answer I want.
One word answer.
One word answer.
three words, actually.
Education for life.
It can be done in two words.
Education for life.
That's all marketing. It's not an exam where it's taken
with the papers. Yeah, time is...
8 seconds, 7 seconds, 6 seconds, 5 seconds.
Two words.
You can only think of character development, but I know something
those
else is what...
all fuzzy, I'll simply tell you. No ragging.
Oh. Absolutely, absolutely.
See... I know what goes on in the outside world. Mm. This ragging is not a part of our tradition. It was supposed to be like primary school, grammar school in England. Mm. And it was not only bullying, it became so brutal.
Yes.
People are assaulted and all that. And during the emergency, Indira Gandhi banned it. Nobody could do it. She said, if I catch you, I'll throw you out and put you in jail. And it stopped. The day she left office, it came back with a vengeance. And that is something you can be legitimately proud of.
Yes.
And there was no order saying no ragging.
Yeah.
It just, everybody knew it's not done. And it became such a habit that people did not even know that they should be ragging and they are not ragging. So that is something spectacular.
Absolutely.
Today in the world, everybody talks about not only bullying, cyberbullying. I don't know how you say bullying, cyberbullying, but they talk about cyberbullying.
Yes. In fact,
so this is something unique. I don't know where this happens.
In fact,
I'm not too sure whether in this institution I've personally seen it, and this is something I can testify to. Till today,
yes,
it is so.
Absolutely.
So you agree?
Absolutely.
I mean, we've gone
this
through it.
This round goes to the question.
But I got very close to it by saying lifestyle and hostel. I was coming to it, actually.
Look, lifestyle...
Character hostel. Development also is part of it. Everything is part
That's
of it.
That's all, you know, Abdul Qasar and Amavashya being related. These two words starkly tell what it means.
Absolutely.
In fact...
There is brutality.
Yes, absolutely.
It says, I am more powerful than you. Yes. What can you do? Yes. It brings out the rakshasa in you.
In fact...
And there is no accountability. They say, no, that's so we won't look at it this way. And it goes on in today's society in all forms and manners. So, we will turn to something else. Worse than your agony.
Okay, just changing, not changing track, but referring to what you mentioned earlier about how suddenly ethics course was introduced in Harvard. And in fact, we have seen that also in some other institutions now. You have many institutions waking up to this idea of trying to sensitize students about integrity and honesty and all that. In fact, in one of the recent studies that they had done to find out what is the quality that makes for best CEOs, and they have found that it is honesty. That is what has really propelled the current CEOs to where they are. So my question is, you have all these institutions, now they are trying to talk about values and sort of teach morality to students, but often I see that they don't want to mention anything about spirituality. They don't want to mention anything about God. So, sort of in the name of being secular, they want to talk about being good. They want to tell students have integrity, but they are coming from an atheistic standpoint. Will that work, sir?
See, there are two issues here. Morals and belief in God. I know many atheists. They are absolutely honest. Okay? Scrupulously honest. And they are very ethical in that sense. So, I won't talk about the need for God. Rather, the man is honest because he wants to be accountable to himself. They all recognize there is a conscience. It is against my conscience. I will not do it. That's all he is. Mm. That is a good starting point. Second thing is, he feels intrinsically, I should not hurt another person. Okay? So, people take a moral stand under many circumstances, depending on the strength of their convictions. Now, you talk about CEO and all that. That's a separate story, on which I'll spend a couple of minutes. But about these morals and convictions, there is something that happened in America. I was in America at that time, 67 to 68. But it actually started a little earlier. When I went to America, I was given a room, which I shared with another professor, in a building called the Ford Lab. And there was a reactor there. Anybody could go around, walk around the reactor and all that. There was a next door another building. I think it was called Cooley Building and that. You cannot enter that lab. Nobody, without a special pass and all that. Next time when I went in 85, the roles changed. My office was in Cooley Building. I could not go to the reactor.
Mm-hmm.
So I told my host professor, I want to go and see my old room. We had to get all kinds of clearances and all that. Simple reason is because it was a reactor, they were afraid of terrorists and they completely securitized this. What about earlier? I could work in a reactor but not go to the building. At that time, that building was full of scientists who were doing classified work, military work in the campus. And they were getting funding from the ministry, military. So, and most of it was directed towards the Vietnam War, so all sorts of things. So many professors said, you got a lot of grants very easily. Just say this is useful division, they'll pour money on you. Many people said, we don't like this war. We have no business waging this war. I don't care if I don't get grants. I will not undertake military research.
Mm-hmm.
Now, was it based on religion? It is based on certain convictions. As an academic, I like to be free. I don't want to work for another man, especially when he's asking me to do something which is going to kill people. It is a principled stand. So that is what I would like to say. Now, regarding the corporate CEOs and all that, they are what you call very honest and so on and so forth. But at the same stage, time, their corporate objectives are related to what is called profitability. So in the name of profitability, they will lay off a lot of people, 5,000 people, 10,000 people. Now, obviously, it is difficult to survive in the market. So many people are willing to say, I don't care, I'll keep you, no matter what. We'll come out of it one day. Very few cases are there.
Yeah.
They said, someday it'll turn around. Mm. Meanwhile, I have no desire to punish you. Instead, what they do is, they say, all of us will take a salary cut.
Yes.
On the other hand, most of the corporations make money by cheating. What they do is they find some law under which they can cheat legally. I'll give you one example. All the credit cards do it, by the way. I heard this from a professor of law in Harvard University, and she was trying to point out how this credit card cheating goes. So one day, one company offered a lot of money and all that. And then they found out that was a fraud. Then she says, this is the way credit card companies cheat illegally, immorally. Legally but immorally. Supposing you live somewhere in California, the last date for payment without interest is something. Okay. So on that day, this company fellows will go to a small village near New York. Very small village, a post office. Before 5 o'clock, he will post the letters. Okay. Stamp shows I've sent you the communication. It'll reach California 5 days later. So penalty is levied. If that fellow is living in New York, the mail will come from California.
Oh my God.
3,000 miles from west to east. And the date we posted at 2 p.m. So we did. Now here, there is a clear intentionality to fix you. The law will be argued in such a way, sorry, but that's the law. So you better pay. Extortion. So we have what you call various ways of doing it. Now coming back to the Harvard question.
Yes, sir.
There was what is called the tech bubble, I think it was called, in the year 2000. Mm. The Enron company openly cheated and so on. And then they found out there was a lot of what you call corporate excessives. So they said, if you become a corporate executive, you must know something about what is going on, and we will tell you what you may do or you may not do. The choice is left to you. That's all. Now, that is not a proactive way of doing it. On the other hand, there are people who take a very proactive view, even those countries. They stand for what they believe is right. And often what they ask for, especially where human rights and all that exploitation are concerned, they are very vocal. So we must not be excessively judgmental. But at times, the forces of history are such that these things are part of the game of dharma-adharma struggle.
Mm.
I don't know whether you're convinced, but that's my perspective.
As you're saying...
That is why...
Yes.
If you take Swami's teaching seriously, and I always dangle the dharma-adharma question in front of my mind, then I will say, okay. Otherwise, it's like throwing away the compass. As I don't know whether I told you
in the movies.
What is the use of a compass when I want to go the other way? So that's... Now people don't have time even to look at that. That's the problem. For example, there was a lot being said about artificial intelligence. All sorts of things were said. They did not address the true point. Why do you need all this? How does it benefit humanity? How does it benefit the planet? How does it... And the other thing which Swami said, nobody talks about. He said, look at nature and see the lessons it learns. Nobody looks at that. That's another problem.
And then nature comes back to teach us the lessons in our own way.
Okay.
Sir, you were mentioning that you wanted to highlight some points regarding this series.
I'm glad you asked. It's not much. Yeah. I'm going to put some points before you.
Sir.
And they are the following. Obviously, all the chapters of Prema Vahini rest on the texture of Prema.
Correct.
Okay. Prema is what God showers on all humans, without exception. Where does He do it? that I'll come to. But some of us don't experience that prema and don't react to it the way we should. I'll give a simple analogy. Today, I saw some photographs of Delhi pollution. It was absolutely frightening.
Yes.
In fact, they said Delhi has beaten even cities in China. So, using that analogy, I'll say, humans today are struggling with the pollution of desires, etc. So we have to get rid of this cloud of ignorance, and that is what we must really learn when you talk about education and learning. Okay, simply put, the lesson to be learned is all about prema. It's very simple. Okay, I read a lot about prema. I listen to a lot of discourses, pravachanam, including Swami's discourses and all that. I hold satsangs, meetings, etc., etc. Then what? Then comes an important question. Long ago, the Chinese scholars, Confucius, said, the essence of knowledge is having it to apply it. So I've got all this knowledge about prema, and so I have to apply it.
Apply it.
Okay. If I just talk about it and all that, the consequences are follows. I mean, I read books and all that. To start with, I become develop a lot of bookish knowledge. I become encyclopedic. I can tell you what that fellow said here, what this fellow said and all that. Soon, I become a great scholar. And I try to see that I got a lot of invited lectures, and of course I get paid for it. Okay. Has this lesson of prema rubbed off on that person? Has he done anything about applying the lessons he has learned, as Confucius wanted us to? This person has obviously not heard about Confucius. By the way, I came to know it a long time ago. In all my notebooks where I took notes, in the first page I would always write something. Sometimes it will be Gandhi, sometimes Vivekananda, and one of them was
Confucius.
So, you know, idealism. Now, let's go back to Swami. He says, na prajaya na dhanaya, tyagai naike amrita manusu. In other words, sacrifice, which is the Sanskrit word for saga, the tyaga is the Sanskrit word for sacrifice, is far more rich than the English word says. But nevertheless, it is through sacrifice you achieve immortality. What it means is, immortality means you become one with me. If you want to become one with me, you must get out of this cloud of ignorance. Okay. And what Swami says is, practice tyaga in your life. Now, tyaga is often translated as love. Not tyaga. Prema is often translated as love. In my view, love without sacrifice is meaningless. It does not become eligible to be called prema. And sacrifice without prema is impossible. Okay?
Absolutely.
I mean, that fellow may not understand a word about prema. But if you have that feeling, I want to see you happy.
Yes.
Then he is doing what God is doing. I want to see you happy. So I give you. And prema is defined by exemplified by the following statement of Swami. He has often said, you won't find iota of swartham and saprayajanam from head to foot. Head to foot you will not find iota of swartham and saprayajanam.
In Swami.
Swartham is selfishness, saprayajanam is self-interest. Now I mention these two words explicitly because in the commercial world, in the economic philosophy, they separate the two. Swartham is bad, saprayajanam is okay.
Oh, okay.
So that is what you will find all the economists say. But Amartya Sen, having come from India and sort of become fascinated with Tagore Buddhism and all that, okay, that is what you call heartless economics. But Indian heartful economics, saprayajanam is allowed to a limited extent. You must moderate it with something. But saprayajanam, without saprayajanam, there is no modern economic theory. That's the problem. So, how do I unlearn all this and try to practice, fail, suffer, and come? there comes one thing that Swami says in one of these discourses. Don't think your life begins with this birth and ends with this birth. You have to go through refinement again and again and again and again. So then eventually, you will be lifted out of the cloud of ignorance and you and I will become one. Without sacrifice, this world cannot improve. Nobody wants to sacrifice. You start first. Pile up. So that is a lot of baloney. If you want to ask any questions, I'll try to. You can embarrass me if you want to.
No, what you said was very beautiful. You said prema is what God gives to us.
Yes.
And so in a manner of saying, I think what you're, what I understood was that this message that the Lord has given us is a part of His prema. And this kind of guidance is, you know, what inspires us to take up, to be righteous in our lives. Is that what you meant?
Yes, but there is also one thing I would remind you about what Swami said. Why is it if God is giving this prema, some transform, very small number,
correct,
most of them don't? That's a valid question. It's an empirical observation. But Swami has given the answer. When rain comes, it doesn't make any distinction. It falls on rock, it falls on hard, dry land, it falls on land that has been cultivated. Where do you expect crops to grow? So, have I prepared myself to receive that lesson? If I go to America without proper education, they will throw me out in 10 minutes. A lot of people... but there are other colleges where they take your money and then throw you out. That's the only difference. For-profit fellows do that. I've seen many students, they are trained in a different way in India. They are not able to cope up with the American system of what you call take homework and all that. In fact, when I was teaching, I had to teach a course for graduate students on group theory. So I did all that. But then I had to give an exam. So I told my colleague who is to sit in the same room, I don't know your examination system. Why don't you do that? So he said, I am going to give a take-home question. This is the question. You can go and consult any book in the library. I don't care.
Oh.
Come back. That's all. So it is a, what you call a loaded question. And then when they brought out, he showed me, take a look at it. Many of them were struggling, but they had struggled the American way. They knew, they showed originality. One paper was very bad. That was an Indian student. He was not trained in this methodology. That they start in the school itself. They start in the school itself. Okay. So, by the time you come there, you have seen many battles. You can do that. So, it depends. In Japan, they do it in a different way. We have to grow collectively. So, the national character shows up there.
There's one question that comes to my mind,
sure,
if I may. You were mentioning about prema and tyaga. And sometime back in the course of the conversation, we also decided that, you know, people need not be theistic. Atheists are also honest. Is prema and tyaga really possible for somebody who has no belief in a God or a theistic approach in life?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Oh, yes. That happens many times. I'll give you two or three examples. One was a more recent one which I heard on the radio. A fellow has just graduated from a university. So he says, I asked myself, what do I do? And then I said, I had the benefit of education because of many socially advantageous factors that helped me. A lot of people who are not able to do that. I am here because they are there. What can I do for them? That is what Vivekananda said.
Yes.
That's what Buddha also said. When he comes to a village and there is a woman of so-called bad character and they said, Buddha, you should not go to her. He scolded them and said, she is like that because of you. You are responsible for immorality and all that. So this fellow talked like that. Then I had heard much earlier some other fellow. That fellow was he invested in market, made a lot of money. And one fine day he said, I am taking two decisions. First is, I will transfer all my shares to the Johns Hopkins University. It's a very famous university in, I think, Maryland. Especially known for its medical
school. Medical school, yes.
So, I know how to make money. I'll make fresh money. This belongs to you. I don't care if you don't acknowledge. It came out in an interview. Next, he goes to a hospital. I've got two kidneys. I need only one. You
yes,
take one.
Yes.
Mm. And then it went to some donor immediately. No. Everybody thought he was bad. What's there in it? He feels a compulsive. That is what is reflected in the actions of the Good Samaritan.
Right.
This story. So this is nothing new. Saint Francis, there is a great poem where he says, how do I sacrifice for you? I don't know. And a beautiful poem. And Baba Amte, I heard a talk by that, forget his name, you know. One fellow is there in the college who come from there. He talked about Baba Amte in the foyer.
Mm-hmm.
So one day he worked for lepers. It was a very great struggle. He was a doctor. And then one day somebody came to him and said, you are doing so much. Why don't you go to Narayana's temple there? Let's go there. He said, why do I have to go there when Narayana comes to me and says, help me? So I don't think he was a particularly religious man, but he got the point right.
Correct.
So,
so I think all these people, I mean, they may not be religious, but I think they were spiritual, even though they may not, worldly way people may not consider them to be spiritual people because they don't talk about God. But as Swami says, if you believe in truth, if you believe in compassion, then you are spiritual.
See, the point is, I put it this way. The spark of the divine is in everyone. That is what our Vedanta says. That spark of the divine is a spark from the divine. That is, therefore, anybody can say things which they have said. In fact, it has happened. People have said things which Swami said 100 years later.
Correct.
100 years later. How could it be? He said, look, the spark of the divine has been in humans for thousands of years, tens of thousands of years. Who can say where it will flower and where it will not flower? There is no way of saying that. So, we think only we have the unique honor of the shortcut to heaven and all. No.
In fact, I just want to...
This is a myth we believe, propagate.
Absolutely. In fact, I want to turn the question around again.
Good.
And so, if this is the stance of somebody who is not in line with a God or a theistic philosophy in life, what is the purpose of God? Like, how does God help somebody to kind of naturally go towards something like prema and tyaga?
You see,
in that sense,
that's a good question. In fact, once I was doing Q&A on Radio Sai, and Satyajit ran to Swami and said, Swami, Venkatraman is answering this question. Can a fellow who doesn't believe in God attain this liberation? Yemi pedda vidya? Dehabhimanam udalesanate He put it as Dehabhimanam.
Mm.
Okay. From Dehabhimanam come all the evils.
Right.
So, now, can you kindly repeat your question?
So the question is, if a belief in God is not necessary for prema and tyaga, how does the belief in God actually help you to inculcate these qualities?
What is the relevance of it now? In some ways.
The choice of relevance is yours. There is a beautiful speech which Gandhiji recorded in London in 1931 when he went for the round table conference.
Okay.
He was going to give a talk, political talk.
Mm-hmm.
And the Columbia Gramophone Company came with their recording apparatus. They said, we want to record your voice. What for? No, your voice must be heard by posterity. I am going to talk politics. They don't have to know what I said. That is irrelevant to posterity. Then he made a deal with them. He said, I'll come to your studio and record something. He wrote a 6-minute speech, because the gramophone recorder is 3 minutes on each side, not the LP. It's 78 RPM. And that is something which I often quote. He begins by saying, there is an indefinable mysterious power that pervades everything. I feel it, though I cannot see it, for it is far beyond the senses. And then he goes on to say, in my tour last year in Mysore, I met many poor villagers. They when asked about who their rulers were, they simply did not know who ruled Mysore. If these knowledge villagers had so little knowledge about their ruler, I, who am infinitely lesser in relation to God than they to the ruler, need not be surprised if I don't know who my God is.
Oh.
So he says, I don't know. Then he tries to argue why I think there should be a God. You see, there is a moral law in the universe. The law and the lawgiver are one. So if there is a law, that lawgiver is God. So, and then he says, ignorance of law is no excuse. You can't go to Singapore and say, I didn't know you could smoke in the thing. That's fine. Now pay $50.
Right.
That's it. So he said, why, I don't want to take the risk of being immoral. Then he makes another beautiful statement. God to be God need not... He is no God who... what is that?
Who only satisfies your intellect.
No, no. Who merely satisfies the intellect. Okay? God to be God must sort of transform...
Rule the senses.
Sense or something like that. Mm. And then he says, is there any proof? He says, God manifests as good actions via his devotees.
Okay.
So that is his proof. And then he says, I cannot convince you.
Hmm.
But I am convinced. I want to play it safe. So here, you don't go into, he doesn't talk about religion. He doesn't talk about any particular religion. There is no me and my God. How do I relate? Is God the fundamentals right? Then it's okay. Because after all, at the end of in Vedanta, all the names attributed to God are given by us.
Correct.
God didn't say, this is my birth certificate, this is my name. You want to call him anything.
Correct.
And there is a very interesting story about this business. R.K. Narayan wrote a story about a tiger becoming spiritual. It goes to a guru. And then it learns a lot of this thing. Vedanta, Adhyatmikam and all that. Mm. Then one day the guru asked the tiger, can you describe your God? Who is your God? My God is a super tiger. Okay? His claws are very powerful. He can pluck clouds from the sky. He can tear rocks and this and that. This one laughs and says, it is quite possible he's like that because he can take any form. Swami has also said this.
Yes.
Buffalo becomes, then he will dream of God as a buffalo. Mm. So we think God must have human forms, so we create human forms and all that. Mm. Just to oblige you, he gives these things. Mm.
So in a sense, what you're saying is, God is like an embodiment of all virtue.
See, God is the source of all virtues.
Yes. Okay.
That is stated as principle. Satya Dharma Shanti Prema Himsa. You can start anywhere. Beauty of Swami is started from Prema. Traditionally, you start from Satya. God is Satya, this and all that. He started from Prema for a very vital and practical reason. First is, if we talk about Satya, I don't know what Satya is. Frankly, how many people can define it? If we talk about Prema, of course, immediately people think of Hindu movies and think Prema in a different way. That is different. But the instinct of Prema can be seen in the world. How animals take care of their babies, how ultimately you can see it in humans. And then you can see it, what you call, apart from the time when the child is a baby. When children are there, they start playing. They like to play all over the place, no matter what. That is because they want to experience ananda through play.
Correct.
It makes them happy. In the midst of refugee camps with bombs falling, people dying, no food, children just play. It's just astonishing.
Beautiful point.
So there is, in fact, I have a picture. Pictures are being copyrighted. I can talk about it. Nobody can. But I can't publish it. I've shown it in many places. There is a one-day-old baby. It is sleeping. It has got a beautiful smile on its face.
Mm.
I don't think the baby even knows who its mother is. So what the hell is that baby? Has it won a $1 million lottery? Nothing. It is its nature.
Mm.
Bliss is my nature, form and all that. You see that. So when you see all these things, I tell myself I'll be a damn fool if I ignore these symptoms. So I automatically develop. I don't have to convince you. I have the belief, and one day I have the reason to explain why I have belief. That's the way I look at it. So automatically, I just look at Adharman and all that. I don't curse that fellow. That is unfortunate, but I have tried to do my duty to you. And that is one of the things that Swami taught. By the way, talking of avatar, I will tell you one incident. Swami was going from here to Bangalore in the car. Somebody was next to him. And he said, "You want to see any form? Tell me now, I'll show it to you." And the other fellow thought about it and said, one of Swami's students, "I want to see Vishwarupa." Swami said, "That is Vishwarupa. He showed all the trees."
Oh, he pointed out of the
car. If he had asked for Rama or Krishna, he didn't want that. He's a Vishwarupa, that's it. So that's it.
Very wow. Nice.
In fact, when you think about it, there is nobody who is atheistic in the world, because everyone in some form or the other, everyone wants love, and that is what the spark of the divine.
See, the point is, we have started talking about theism and atheism because there is a duality we have created. There is only one. So I create a duality and say, if you are not this, you are no good and all that. I would simply say, do you have the following attributes? Then you become equivalent to God, what God wants out of you. That's all I want. In order to say you are not a monkey and a man, I'll conduct some tests. So automatically, the difference is established. So we get into all these kind of unwanted debates. This problem is there on many sides. Those who are especially orthodox and all that, they will say, if you don't believe me, then you are an atheist.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing is there. And as far as the atheists are concerned, there is the famous Richard Dawkins.
Mm.
So he was, he said that God doesn't exist and all that usual stuff. But somewhere in the end he says, you know, I have a soul. And I want my personal soul. So I want to go to Shakespeare's plays. I want to go to what you call music Beethoven's concerts. I want to hear Beethoven. I feel elevated. And that is for my personal soul. So why the hell is he bringing the word soul? And, no, for me, it looks like the only soul is the soul of the shoe. But there is some aspect they are not able to talk about.
Yes.
And when you talk to them about consciousness, it is an evolutionary property. It is just part of, you know, like life came out of inner thing. They won't explain life.
Mm-hmm.
And if you ask some questions about that, those are all stupid questions. Basically, they bulldoze you with their high-tech arrogance. That's the long and short of it. The question of atheism, theism and all that is tarkavadam.
It's argumentation.
And in a later this thing I can explain why it is so. Because everybody talks of rationality and all. The rationality of the biologist is inferior to the rationality of physics, mathematics. And in mathematics, long ago, mathematician Gödel answered a question by David Hilbert, a mathematician of 19th century. He wrote down 20 questions. This is what mathematicians of 20th century should answer. In that, there was a logical problem. In the long and short of it was, Gödel said, you cannot approach God through logic. There are certain questions. So you have to go to it through feelings.
Mm.
And feelings, you cannot write it down. It is experiential. There is no meter how much your feeling is and all that. That's not. I mean, I can measure blood pressure, cholesterol, sugar, etc. and say, from this I conclude this thing on this scale, it is this much. That is not the way to do it. Although Upanishads talk about from Kikli Anandam and other insects and so on, they go on a power of 10.
Yeah.
But that is not what it is. And they just experience. That's why Swami used to say, the rishis experience, the recommend, sir, I will tell you about it.
Mm.
And then it's better you follow and you also experience.
Correct.
We don't patent that thing. So, somewhere there is, I saw the word methodology.
Yeah.
That is the methodology, is the textbook part.
Hmm.
But you follow it like Confucius. That is the whole thing.
Hmm. Wow. In fact, I'm reminded of one article that you had written long ago, God, the Avatar and the Intellectual.
Did I write like that? How much of nonsense is that?
Oh, come on.
I don't know. I don't take it. I just write. And you actually read it?
Come on. It is there. I think I should take this opportunity to remind all the listeners to just search for this article, because all that you mentioned now, it's there in great detail in that very long article actually you had written many years ago. Commenting on
I must thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, sir. I know time is running out. There are so many. I mean, this paragraph is so significant in the sense that because it reflects what is happening in the world today. So, you know, as you read, you keep getting so many questions. But then I guess.
No, getting questions is good because it's jignasu.
Yes, sir.
See, and the other fellow will say, look at what is Dow Jones today? That will be a question.
But then I think we'll move on to chapter 14 in the next session. But I think these issues will keep coming up, so we'll come back to this topic in perhaps in different route again. Thank you so much, sir. So, dear listeners, with that, it's time to wind up this segment of Thursday Life. Thank you so much for being with us all through the day. And if you have missed the previous episodes of Vahini Satsang, like you can do for every other program on Thursday Live, you can download it from our website and listen at your convenience. Please do send us your feedback. You can write to listener@radiosai.org. We wait for your feedback, because that definitely gives us a good idea of what is being conveyed and how it has been conveyed and how much of it is of use to you. And as I mention every time, please, when you have some moments to spare, open Bhagwan's Premavahini and go through the chapters and do share what insights you get and how you've been able to put some of these into practice in your life. Thank you so much. Sai Ram.
So how did it?